Hello, and welcome to this Society of Thoracic Surgeons Roundtable. Today we'll be discussing mentorship. My name is Mara Antonoff, and I'm a thoracic surgeon at MD Anderson Cancer Center in Houston. Let's start by introducing ourselves.
I'm Vinod Thorani, cardiac surgeon in Washington, D.C. at Georgetown University and MedStar Heart and Vascular Institute.
My name's John Mitchell. I'm a general thoracic surgeon at the University of Colorado in Denver.
And I'm Elizabeth David. I'm a general thoracic surgeon at the University of Southern California in Los Angeles.
There are a number of issues to consider when selecting a mentor. Perhaps we might delve into the topic by discussing some of the traits that are important to find in a mentor. Dr. Mitchell, what are some of the key attributes that a mentor should possess?
Well, a mentorship-mentee relationship, it really comes down to mutual respect, trust, affability. Mentors need to be careful about who they take on as mentees. It's something that you need to do carefully and thoughtfully. Someone who will align with your goals, who you fit well with. I think it's important that mentors not be afraid to co-mentor. I think many mentees benefit from having many mentors, so that's not a bad thing, it's a good thing. Third, I think a mentor should run a tight ship. So communication is key with the mentee. The mentee and the mentor, for that matter, need to be accountable, and they need to have realistic expectations about the relationship. And then finally, I'd say, you know, mentors need to avoid some classic mistakes when being a mentor, so-called mentor malpractice. Things like not co-opting the mentee's project for their own, not thrusting a project you want to do on the mentee, not making the mentee adhere to your timeline, which might start and stop. Things like that, the mentor needs to be aware of and do the right thing when it comes to the mentee.
I think those are a lot of really important attributes. Are there other attributes that you all think are important in a mentor?
I actually haven't heard that before. You know, the mentor needs to be selective, you know, because people come to us asking for mentorship, and I generally will say yes, but sometimes maybe I shouldn't. And so I think that that's a very important thing, John. I haven't really thought about that nearly as much, and I think you have to make sure that the connection is there so that it will be productive for both parties.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Right. It is a significant investment from both parties in order to have a really successful mentor-mentee relationship. The mentee, I think, you know, if the mentee can drive the relationship to where they're able to, so come with a prepared agenda for meetings, establish some goals, then I think it makes it easier for the mentor to have a place to start from and then help guide them to, you know, whatever the ultimate goal is via a stepwise method.
So I think that having that goal is important. So for instance, if you choose someone who is in private practice and you want to do basic science, then that person's not your best, you know, mentor. But that, so I think you have to develop which strengths that mentor has, and you may have one or two different mentors for that specific reason. So I think that's important too, that you know the mentee and the mentor understand what they can provide each other.
Mm-hmm. Well, you've both alluded to the fact that a mentee may have multiple mentors for different purposes. So can you touch on that a little bit further and maybe help us understand why an individual might have a mentor for different purposes? And even if you do practice in an area that's different than your mentor, are there still other aspects of either potentially work-life balance or practice management or some other part of your development that you could still get from that mentor?
No, absolutely. First of all, I want to say thanks for including a cardiac surgeon as the token person. This is a thoracic group here, so thanks for doing that. No, I think it's critically important. And you know, sometimes it's nice to have your own self-reflection a little bit. In my own institution, I had Robert Guyton as my mentor, but then Joe Bavaria and Michael Mack also became mentors outside of my sphere. And I had a fourth mentor, Jacob Vitney Johansson, for basic science. So I actually ended up having in my career so far four people that I kind of bounced a lot of ideas off and would discuss things, and each one of them had their own strengths. Basic science, Jacob, I would clearly not ask him about clinical stuff. Robert Guyton and I were together for 26 years, and so we became almost, you know, a relationship that transcended work, but I would ask him about clinical I would ask him, because we were together in practice, I would ask him clinical stuff. I would also ask him about just general life stuff. And then Jill and Mike Mack were able to help me on the political end, but also on the research end, especially Mike Mack was one of the best clinical trialists I've ever met in my life, and he was able to help me negotiate that. So for me personally, I've had four mentors, and I think that you have to find what works for you in your specific arena of your interest. So I think it's very important to have more than one person that you reach out to. Find what you're interested in, and then find those mentors in that specific area.
So a lot of the mentors that you've described happen to be in practice in the same location as you, and these are relationships that kind of happened organically. But there are some very successful mentor-mentee relationships that occur as part of an institutionalized program, not necessarily just by being next door to another individual. So Dr. David, can you talk a little bit about some of the formal mentor-mentee relationships that are available?
Happy to. So, you know, as Dr. Tarani mentioned, it's very important to build a network of mentorship and or of mentors. And students and residents who are not in places where they have robust cardiothoracic programs may not have direct access to cardiothoracic surgeons for mentors. So the Society of Thoracic Surgeons has made a huge investment in mentorship, in primarily through the Looking to the Future program, which is now in its 13th year. And the point of that program is to assign students and residents to mentors who are not local, just to build that network for them, to have someone they can contact after the meeting. So it's a program where they get help during the meeting, have set up interactions with that person, and then hopefully there's a longitudinal relationship that follows the meeting. The women in thoracic surgery additionally have have a similar scholarship program for the meeting itself, but also several traveling opportunities that can again help those who don't have the local opportunities that we may in larger institutions.
Especially through TSF, I do want to mention the Thoracic Surgery Foundation and the allows so many different avenues to go build that mentorship relationship.
Yeah, that's terrific. There are many different ways that people can develop mentors, both locally and in a long distance format, as we've discussed. And we talked a little bit about what the relationship is like and how it can be a give and take relationship. Every mentor-mentee relationship might be a little bit different depending on whether it is someone who's right next door or someone who's across the country and how you may communicate with each other. And we talked a lot about what makes a good mentor, but are there some expectations you have of a mentee and how they should participate in that relationship? What are some of the top rules that a mentee should follow?
Yeah, and in many ways, I think they're similar, Mara. The mentees need to be very careful about who they choose as a mentor. I think that a lot of people in our profession eventually see somebody that they would like to model their career after. They look at somebody and say, that's how I would like to be as they move through their career. And along that line, mentees need to be very clear about what they expect from their mentor. For some people, they want to be coached from point A to point B. Other times, people need a sponsor to open doors for them for new opportunities. And that speaks to multiple mentors, as Vino talked about. And then finally, I think mentees need to under-promise and over-deliver. They need to exceed expectations. They need to be energetic. They need to be fun to be with. They need to engage with the mentor while being mindful of the mentor's time.
And one of the things that I look at, in addition, I think John pretty much hit all the major points, and I think they're phenomenal ideas that he's made there. You know, I still believe that we need to remain in a high ethical standard, and I think that as we are role models, whether we like it or not, we're role models. And I think that as we keep our ethical compass, and when we think of all the things that go on in the world now, I think we have to kind of make sure that the mentee that I look for is that they're a truthful, honest person who has great integrity and ethics. Mm-hmm. And that's something that I continue to push on the younger, especially in the research arena. I think you've got to stay true to integrity and just not find the easiest pathway there. And I want someone who's going to work at it long term, not just someone who's looking for a quick letter. So I try to differentiate that mentee that's not just in it for a quick letter, but really is in it for the long term and for the right reasons.
Correct. I think, you know, to really have a productive relationship, it's as I said, a huge investment of time, and it requires a longitudinal development. And so the mentees who are really just looking for the quick publication, quick letter, you know, it's a little bit harder to invest in those trainees. But the ones who respond well to the sort of graduated responsibility that we do with our surgical trainees, right, you know, those are the ones I think where you're more likely to have a very productive mentorship relationship.
So you mentioned that it's a longitudinal relationship, and so I'm curious, how long are these relationships, and do they continue at different stages of the career? Dr. Thorani, can you touch on that? At what stages of career does someone need a mentor?
I think in this day and age now, I really think med school is where it starts. I think undergrads are still a little bit junior, and they haven't really developed their ideas, and I've mentored some undergrads who then went off and didn't even go into med school, and so we had a productive relationship, but it didn't go in the direction that I thought it might. So I think med school really is where it starts. And I still have medical students now that I've mentored who are now at a variety of universities that we still text and talk to each other. So I think med school is where it starts. I think that it's greater than 10 years, especially if they go into cardiothoracic surgery. Yeah. Then it becomes lifelong. And to me, med school is where it should start, especially because of the I-6 program. And we should plan for that to continue long term. And there are some that I continue to do that with.
And do you all still have mentors at this stages of your career?
Oh, absolutely. Yes.
Oh, yes.
Oh, yes. Yeah, absolutely.
Yes. For me, it started really as a surgical resident at the MGH, Doug Mathiesen. And I, to this day, consider him still to be a mentor.
I still meet with my mentors when we go to meetings. We text each other and say, hey, let's sit down for an hour together. And I still do that to this day.
I still, the same way, Blair Marshall was a huge mentor for me in general surgery. I see her at most meetings that I go to. And, you know, I have just added to the network each step along my training path. You know, I have added mentors. And, you know, people may fall off or have less communication at certain periods in my career, but you know, when I was contemplating a move, I certainly reached out to a lot of people, and I think that's a very much the part of the lifelong process and career progression in surgery.
Just to shift gears a little bit, the STS has really placed a lot of emphasis recently on diversity and inclusion. And I'm hoping we can talk a little bit about what role mentorship plays in diversity and inclusion. And Dr. Mitchell, you mentioned sponsorship as one of the activities that a mentor can do. And I think that's something else that we can address in terms of how we can use sponsorship to help with diversity and inclusion. What are your thoughts, Dr. David?
So I think that one of the important messages about diversity and inclusion really comes in the form of being aware of who's not in the room or who's not at the table. And then when you see those folks, figuring out how to get them in the room or in the table, on the table, or at the table, excuse me. And I think that you know, it's easiest when we can find ways of identifying directly with those students or trainees. But even for people who we can't identify with, you know, whether it's by race or ethnicity or what other underrepresented status, we need to be aware of the barriers that those folks may be facing, whether they're conscious or unconscious. And you know, if you are not the right person to help them with a certain barrier, it would behoove you to help them find someone who can help. And so whether that becomes using your own network of mentors and say, hey, you know, I have this person that you might be able to help better than I can. Right. That is part of mentorship and sponsorship.
I think we're making a dent. I mean, for the first time at the STS meeting, there were special sessions just for, you know, diversity and inclusion. And it's more than just race and ethnicity, there's gender. So I think that we're starting to make a dent. I think that the workforce that you chair on early career will also help make a dent. So I think you have to give credit really to the STS for thinking forward. I know that maybe we haven't done it always great, but having Keith Nonheim and Rich Brager and now Bob Higgins kind of really bring that to the limelight, I think we're going to make a lot of progress over the next 5 years.
It comes in multiple forms. You know, having attended the WTS membership meeting last evening, it was a huge crowd, the largest we've ever seen, and it's wonderful to see so many women supporting one another, which is great, and there's the opportunities for same-sex mentorship, which has a lot of value, but also the he for she movement and the number of wonderful male cardiothoracic surgeons that showed up at the event to show support for their female colleagues. Right. That form of support and sponsorship is incredibly important, and we're very fortunate to see how quickly things are changing in the era in which we practice.
Agree.
Any thoughts, Dr. Mitchell?
No, I couldn't agree more. And I guess I would come back around to the beginning about mentors. It's a proactive activity. You gotta use effort to achieve an optimal result, but it's incredibly rewarding. I'm sure everybody here would agree. And it's something that we would encourage everybody to do for others.
Terrific. Well, does anyone have any closing thoughts?
I will say that I think, I just came from a session where our medical student was presenting his research, and I think I was more nervous for the talk than he was, but it was such a satisfying feeling to see him up there, presenting well, handling questions like an expert. And there's really no greater reward than setting up others for success.
Yeah, I think the viability of our profession is reliant on mentorship. And that's the reason most people go into a specialty on top of their interest. So if we think it's not important, we're completely wrong. For those of you people who think that mentoring is not important, you're wrong. It is the viability of our profession going forward. So I think that's very important for not just us academics, but for every cardiac surgeon and cardiothoracic surgeon in the country.
Well, this has been a fantastic conversation. I'd like to thank our guests for participating, and this will conclude our session.